taking to the airwaves. Japanese Emperor Akihito made a rare televised address to the nation on Monday.
When I consider my age of over 80 years, as well as my gradually deteriorating physical condition, I have concerns about not being able to fulfill my duties as emperor, as I have done over the past 20 years.
Silverthorne holds the office of mayor of the city of Fairfax. Silverthorne provided methamphetamine to an undercover Fairfax County police detective and was subsequently arrested and charged with that felony offense.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:07. It is Monday, August 8th, 2016. Welcome to another edition of The Opening Bell. Welcome to another business day, another business week. I wish I had better news for you if you're flying on Delta Airlines this morning. As you heard Vic say, the business of flying today is not flying for one of the world's largest airlines. Delta Airlines has grounded all of its flights worldwide. It is experiencing some unspecified system issue is what they're describing it as. But what we know is no flights are taking off and no passengers are getting on planes yet. This is a critical outage, again, that is affecting flights, apparently globally. Delta, according to one of its tweets, says that it's experiencing some sort of computer outage. It's affecting a flight scheduled for this morning. Obviously, when this sort of thing happens, as you know, it causes a ripple effect. If you have Delta jets parked at gates, you can't get other flights in. Other flights will be delayed. Delta sometimes has connections with other flights. There are other things that go on with all of this. So let's hope it doesn't go on any longer. But we'll keep you posted here as we move through the morning on this big story in Delta Airlines grounded worldwide because of some sort of a computer issue. Let's go to the WGN market desk. Vic gave you some of the numbers at the top of the hour, but I'll tell you a little bit more about what's going on. Asian stocks a little higher after U.S. strong jobs data last week, still having an effect on investors' moods this Monday morning. The economy, world's largest economy, still growing, helped boost American stocks to record highs. U.S. stocks jumped to record highs last week, too, as the Dow Jones Industrials on Friday rose 191 points. That's about 1%. It was a good day all around on the U.S. stock market on Friday. China's exports fell again in July compared with the year earlier, while decline in imports accelerated. Benchmark U.S. crude oil stands at $42 a barrel today, and the dollar gained against the yen and the euro. One other big story that we'll be following today, the FBI director says the agency is collecting data that he'll present next year in hopes of sparking a national conversation about law enforcement's increasing inability to access encrypted electronic devices. Speaking on Friday at the American Bar Association conference in San Francisco, James Comey says the agency was unable to access 650 of 5,000 electronic devices investigators attempted to search over the last 10 months for various criminal investigations. Comey says encryption technology makes it impossible in a growing number of cases to search those electronic devices. He says it's going to be up to U.S. citizens to decide whether to modify that technology and whether there's some sort of balance between solving crimes and keeping things private. It is Monday. That means it is time for the Allstate CEO Spotlight. And how about we spend the morning at the museum? You've heard of the movies, The Night at the Museum, Overnight at the Museum. Well, we're going to spend the morning at the museum. Our guest this morning is the president and CEO of the Field Museum in Chicago, Dr. Richard LaRiviere. He has been at the Field Museum since 2012, and he's the guy that's in charge of all of that stuff at the Field Museum. He's with us this morning. Dr. LaRiviere, tell us first, what gets you going in the morning? What gets you up? What is your passion? And does that sort of translate into what happens at the field? And do you spread that to other people at the field as well?
Well, that's a great question. What makes me tick? I've been in education all my life. I used to say when I was university president, I've been in school since I was five. And I'm still in school at the Field Museum. It's a great, great teaching institution. And that's what makes me tick.
It is an understatement to say it's a great teaching institution. It's one of our national treasures, I think. Give us, our listeners, a sense of that. How important is it not only to Chicago, but to the country, to the world?
Well, Steve, the Field Museum for most people is the public face, the displays, the exhibits, et cetera, which are enchanting and exciting and never-ending source of fascination. But the real obligation, the moral obligation of the Field Museum to the world is its collections. We have something around 30 million specimens and artifacts in that museum, in that building. And these represent one of the greatest collections of the history of life on Earth anywhere. And I'll give you a specific example. In 1928, when Teddy Roosevelt's son Kermit was shooting mammals in South China and sending them back to the Field Museum, nobody had a clue that the panda skins that came out of those expeditions would be absolutely essential to the preservation of the panda in 2016, because nobody knew about DNA. And those collections will never, ever be replicated, because you can't go back to 1928 China and shoot pandas. We have those specimens. And we have the scientific evidence and record that's there. And as technology changes, we get more and more information from these incredibly valuable collections that can never be replicated. And it's our obligation to preserve those collections for the future.
Is it a misconception among people that that is the real mission of the Field Museum, and that is to study those aspects of our world instead of display things?
Yes, I think for most of the public, they think often when I say to people less than 1% of our collections are on display, they express, first of all, shock. And then they say, well, when is the rest of it going to go on display? And the truth of the matter is that the collections really aren't for display. The collections are for scientific study. And we put some of them on display to tell the stories, the scientific stories that we discover on a daily basis.
I want to talk a bit about those collections. It was recently in the Federalist online. It was a report, an article saying to big museums, stop hoarding your collections, stop hoarding the treasures, is what the headline says. How do you respond to that? I mean, as you just admitted, there are these wonderful treasures there that nobody ever gets to see. Is it something that you would consider or should be considered?
Oh, that's first of all, I'm really impressed that you read that article in the Federalist. I just read that article yesterday. That's a legitimate query. And I read that article. The man had really done his homework. He had his facts right. But what he didn't understand is that the purpose of those collections isn't display, but rather scientific investigation. Now, he was talking about art museums, and art museums are slightly different than natural history museums, but not all that different. I mean, the massive collections of the Art Institute, of the Met, and of MoMA, there's a lot of headlines around the cost of these, the value of these from a monetary standpoint, but they're really... These institutions are the repositories of record for human achievement in the case of art, and in the case of natural history museums, of the history of life on Earth.
Dr. Richard LaRiviere is the CEO and president of the Field Museum. We're going to take a break here, and we'll be back with our morning conversation, Morning at the Museum conversation, here on the opening bell on the Allstate CEO Spotlight.
ABC News, Wall Street Now, I'm Dave Schreiber. Asian stocks rose today after strong U.S. jobs data reassured investors the world's largest economy still is growing and boosted American stocks. China's exports fell again in July by an unexpectedly sharp margin, while a decline in imports accelerated. Australia's treasurer said today that national security would be his overriding consideration when he makes a decision on whether to allow a Chinese consortium to lease a major electricity grid in Sydney. Official figures show that German industrial production rebounded in June to grow by 0.8%. ConAgra Foods expected to accept a plea deal later this week involving a salmonella outbreak nearly a decade ago involving tainted Peter Pan peanut butter that sickened hundreds of Americans. Dave Schreiber, ABC News.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. It is 520, and we're on the Allstate CEO Spotlight today on the CEO and president of the Field Museum of Chicago, Dr. Richard LaRiviere. And he is with us this morning talking about the museum, its future, its past and present. Dr. LaRiviere, before we went to the break, we were talking about all the wonderful collections that you have there at the field. Is it impossible to put a price tag on all of that, or perhaps maybe have you?
Well, we do actually put a price tag on our collections. We carry them on our books officially at $1. Really? And the reason for that is that it would cost far more to appraise our collections than we could ever afford, because we've got 30 million objects. So we literally carry them on our books at $1. But you're right, they are priceless. And they're not just priceless from a marketing standpoint, but we have no idea right now what the scientific impact of these collections will be 25 years from now. And the reason that we have no idea is that we don't know what the technology is going to be capable of 25 years ago.
So there is science and history there that may not have been discovered yet.
Absolutely. I can't tell you what the scientific technology will be able to do 25 years from now. But what I can tell you with absolute certainty is that you can never, ever replicate these collections again.
One of the great stories I remember you telling me was about how the Field Museum saved the bald eagle. I wonder if you could tell our listeners that story.
Yes. Well, the Field Museum didn't do that single-handedly, but our collections were essential to establishing the fact that DDT caused the thickness of eggshells in birds to get so thin that when they sat on them, they broke. And, of course, that was devastating for the populations. But we had peregrine falcon eggs collected every year for 75 years. So we could measure precisely the thickness of those eggs over that period of time. And it was very clear that as the use of DDT grew in the United States, that the thickness of those eggshells diminished. And that was a compelling piece of evidence that enabled the federal government to ban the use of DDT.
Let's talk about the health of the Field Museum financially, from an institutional standpoint. Where does it stand now? Because I know all of the museums have been struggling.
Yes. When I came here 4 years ago, I was confronted with some pretty serious financial challenges. We've gotten those under control really, really rapidly through some restructuring of various kinds. We were fortunate. We'd had no involuntary separations of staff, but we had some retirements. We had some people leave, and we have increased our attendance pretty dramatically. We've got some really good marketing staff working for us now. So we're in a pretty healthy situation. We're not out of the woods yet, but we're in much better shape than we were 4 years ago.
During the entire discussion over the museum, the Star Wars Museum, the George Lucas Museum, I couldn't help but think about the Field Museum and Adler and all of the others that are there, thinking, why would they put another silly museum, my words, next to all of these wonderful institutions? Are you glad that's over?
Well, I'm glad that the divisiveness is over. I still am heartbroken that this really wonderful museum isn't going to be in Chicago, apparently. But I also understand the passion of people who try to protect the green parks of the city. That would have been a great add to the museum campus. And I had several conversations with Mr. Lucas about his intentions around the museum. And it wasn't a Star Wars museum. It was about narrative art. And I still look forward to seeing that museum.
Based on your discussions, did you get a sense that it would draw away visitors from the field or enhance visitors?
I think it probably would have enhanced visitors. It would have forced the city to address the transportation problem to and from the museum campus. It would have attracted more visitors to the city. It would have been a big net plus, I think.
What is the biggest challenge you, as the head of this institution, face in both keeping the field relevant and attracting younger people who may not have ever been there?
Great question. We are doing, for the first time, really serious assessments of who visits the museum. And it's very surprising. 48% of the visitors to the museum are between the ages of 20 and 35. And only 20% of the people who come to the museum bring children with them. This is a young adult institution. And that's counterintuitive because we all tend to think of it's a place for young families, small children, etc. But in fact, the people who visit the museum, the 1.5 million people who come every year, most of them are adults and they're pretty young.
Would you like to see younger people come, and how do you get those?
Well, we're constantly looking at ways to appeal to the various segments of the demography and always trying to adjust our message. I mean, Chicago's demography has changed quite a lot since 1893 when we were first founded, and 1921 when we moved into our building. And we have to change with it. And so we're constantly adapting our public face.
The discovery, the number of discoveries, it still seems at some point, I've always thought, well, we're going to find everything we're going to find. But it seems every week there's a new discovery about a new dinosaur, a new animal. Does that surprise you that we're still discovering stuff?
Oh, no. The Field Museum last year made something like 200 new discoveries of species previously unknown to science. And we pretty much do that every year. What we don't know far, far, far exceeds what we do know. And the wonderful thing about the Field Museum is the excitement of that discovery is what animates our scientists.
And it is also one of the biggest things that teachers will tell you propels students forward is this idea of discovery. How do you work with teachers to get kids interested in that spirit of discovery?
We have hundreds of thousands of school kids come through the Field Museum, and we develop curricular materials to help teachers match the experience in the museum to the new generation of science standards. But we also have lots and lots of interns. I think we have probably 350, 400 interns this summer working on scientific projects in the Field Museum. And one of the things that's wonderful to see is junior high school and high school kids making scientific discoveries themselves. And that is, as any teacher will tell you, how you get them hooked.
That's Dr. Richard LaRiviere, the CEO, president and CEO of the Field Museum of Chicago, in the Allstate CEO Spotlight this morning. We'll have more of our conversation. We'll put up the full conversation coming up on podcast later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell, 537. As Vic mentioned at the top of his news, the outage of Delta Airlines, a global outage affecting Delta Airlines this morning. Thousands of people who have flights scheduled this morning are stopped or are not going anywhere. The problem seems to be getting worse in terms of the number of flights now that are being affected by this as we get into the peak hours of the morning that are business related. ABC News correspondent John Gonzalez filed this report just a little bit ago from Reagan National Airport on the situation there.
Right now, a worldwide outage is how Delta officials are describing this. They've been apologizing to customers on Twitter this morning. The cause of this outage, still unknown, but of course it was just weeks ago. Southwest Airlines had a similar situation, and now Delta experiencing the problem.
And there, we know it is worldwide because ABC News correspondent Bob Woodruff is in China, in Beijing, and he's trying to get home.
I'm in Beijing, just about ready to take off for Delta. And then we got in the plane, and then suddenly there's an announcement that this thing is delayed. And apparently it turns out that this outage is around the world for all of Delta.
We will continue to follow this story, obviously, throughout the morning here on 720 WGN and on the show here tomorrow. We'll let you know the very latest about what's happening with Delta Airlines. As one of the reporters there mentioned, this comes just a little bit after Southwest Airlines had a similar problem just a couple of weeks ago. But generally, airlines have been doing well, and that's what we want to talk to Rick Seeney about today. Rick Seeney is the president and CEO of FareCompare.com, and he is with us from Dallas this morning. Rick, also there's been, in addition to the report about the airlines seemingly doing a better job where customer performance is concerned, we're also seeing that airfares are the lowest they've been in quite a while, and this is a report that's been done over the last year.
Yeah, some data just came out from the Department of Transportation. It's about 6 months old, so it's not super accurate, but it's pretty directionally accurate. It looks like prices have dropped pretty dramatically, about 5 or 6% since, well, year over year, and then time frame the lowest since 2010, right after the recession and the fuel crisis in 2008 and 2009. And if you look at the reasons why, a lot of it is recent fuel prices under $40. I was listening to all the airlines investor calls. They think they have too much capacity. We just saw revised numbers on the economy with GDP just barely over 1%. That usually means the economy's not as good. So you got a few empty middle seats. You got some people with less money. Typically, that means cheaper prices.
So how do we find these cheaper fares and keep them cheap, keep our price cheap, and not get gouged by some of the other stuff that's involved, the bag fees, et cetera?
Sure, yeah. So, I mean, as far as bag fees are concerned, $50 round trip on most airlines, with the only exception now is Southwest. So you need to make sure you check that when you're shopping. The cheapest days to fly are Tuesday, Wednesday, and Saturday. Even if you do that on half your trip, you get half the benefit. We also have a magic date, a departure date of August the 23rd. That's when kids start to go back to school. Airlines drop their prices by 15% to 20%. So you'd be shopping really until good prices, really until mid-November as we slide into Thanksgiving. So you've got about a 2.5 month window there where you're going to have some really good pricing. I was looking at some prices out of Chicago, under $200, Seattle, Portland, right at San Francisco, Los Angeles, places like Miami as well. So some really good pricing, and really the Northeast Coast, Boston, New York, under $150. So some of that includes Spirit and Frontier flying out of there, which are undercutting the bigger airlines sometimes by half on nonstops.
So let's talk about this date again, August 23rd. Does that mean we have to buy by August 23rd? And what are some of the other...
No, that's actually a departure date. So you want to start shopping right now. So you should be shopping and really looking for dates after August the 21st. And it is for both for domestic and for international travel, especially transatlantic travel. We see a huge drop in prices across the ocean of about 15% to 20%, also domestic as well. So shop now and then travel after the 23rd. There has to be a time when one person is paying 20% more than the other. That's the person that leaves August 22nd and the person that leaves August 23rd with a big drop.
And when we plan our travel, we could plan it how far in advance, as far as we want?
Yeah, you need to actually be doing it as typically what you want to do is start shopping about 3 months earlier, no later than 1 month before. So you're inside that 1 month window if you want to travel in August. Perfect time to shop for Labor Day weekend and all the way out until late October, early November. Right now you should be shopping.
So with these cheap fares, with this stuff that you've been talking about, this magic date, if we're on a budget and have a tight wallet, what are some tips to help us get through on a vacation?
Yeah, you should check out one of our new tools that we just launched this past week. It's called FareCompare.com/maps. You just go to there, it posts prices on the map. You could say, I want to go to golf, I want to go to ski, I want to go to beaches, I want to go to resorts and parks, and it'll actually show you by month and by time ranges when you can actually go and find a cheap deal. I like to call it my get me out of town tool. So I was just looking for golf this morning. So as fall comes, some of those great golf destinations like Phoenix come into play.
Let's talk a little bit about the Zika virus, because we've seen now the CDC issue what many say is the first known travel warning in the United States by the CDC regarding a health problem.
Yeah, so we've seen that in Miami, and I was actually looking to see if prices to Miami have dropped a little bit. It looks like Frontier, for example, has dropped the prices dramatically into Miami. We haven't seen the other legacy airlines drop the prices too much, but certainly fears about going into South Florida, certainly, and especially Miami, and then the other airport that's relatively close, Fort Lauderdale, I would expect prices to go down as demand starts to go down. It's already a slower time anyway because of hurricane jitters that are in play, and we haven't really seen hurricanes the last few years at any frequency, but typically this time of year, the prices start to drop anyway to South Florida.
And I hear that they're investigating cases possibly in the Carolinas, other southern states. We were told by the CDC once this has, you know, jumped here, and it has now, that it's just going to spread to other states as well. So this is not just going to be a Florida problem.
No, I don't think so. I think it's going to be, I really think it's going to be in the mosquito zones, and that could go all the way into anywhere on the Gulf states, including Texas, Louisiana, all the way across Alabama, through Mississippi and whatnot. So that's certainly going to be a potential issue. We've seen what happened with the Zika scare with the Olympics coming up, with people pulling out of the Olympics and a variety of people not going to the games for that. So this is definitely something. We saw the Ebola scare a couple 18 months ago or so, almost 2 years ago. We saw what that did to travel to certain locations. These kind of scares, if they don't get them under control, could have a dramatic effect on travel and pricing.
The last time we talked about Southwest computer problems. The Southwest pilots and other employees at Southwest actually making a big fuss about how this all unfolded, and perhaps Southwest doesn't have the best technology. Are you following that?
Yeah, I've been following Southwest for a long time. They're in my hometown, and I would agree with some of the statements that I read through. Historically, Southwest has had a bit of an antiquated system. Now, they've put in literally, I think it's close to hundreds of millions of dollars now into a new system from a company based in Europe, Amadeus, that they were supposed to be rolling out over the next 12 to 18 months, which will bring them on par with some of the other legacy airlines that are out there. So I do agree that their systems are older and they're held together by bailing wire. When you have networking issues and all your networks go into Central Hub, that's not a good idea.
The pilots, if I'm reading the headlines correctly, they've actually asked for some resignations.
I've read some of that too. Yeah. So the internal politics, I'm not sure, but the pilots can be very vocal in these particular situations. We saw what it did to the Southwest stock when it occurred. There's some other announcements about some softness in business travel as well. So in general, airlines have to be really aware of cyber issues and potential cyber attacks. You can see what happened when you have a ground stop of everything. It takes at least 3 to 4 days to unwind. I'm still getting calls from friends and family saying some of their sons and daughters and whatnot were stuck for 2 or 3 days.
And back to the cheap fares, get us out of town again. Where can we go?
Yeah, it's faircompare.com/maps. And right now I was looking, you know, out of the Chicago area, and in the $200 range round trip, and that's great pricing. You have the entire Northwest, Seattle, Portland, going down the coast, San Francisco, L.A. You also have in the Northeast places like Montreal, Toronto, Boston, New York, Washington, all in that price range. South Florida also in that price range as well. When you get to low-cost airlines like Spirit and Frontier, some of those prices are under $100 round trip.
All right. Happy, safe travels.
Hey, thanks, Steve.
Rick Sini is the founder and CEO of FareCompare.com out of Dallas. You can follow him at Rick Sini and at FareCompare on Twitter.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
It is 5:50 on the WGN Market Desk. The Dow futures pointing toward a higher open on Wall Street later this morning, up about 33 points. The S&P and NASDAQ futures higher as well. Let's get the latest on commodity news now. And good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. We start this trading week wondering if we can keep the streak going in soybean export sales. Soybeans last Friday reported 498,000 tons of sales to importer China for delivery in the new crop marketing year starting September 1st. It was the 8th consecutive trading day on which the USDA confirmed a soybean deal with China or with unknown destinations, and over that 8-day period, 2.8 million tons of soybeans. Can we keep it going this week? August soybeans gained 13 cents Friday on that strong export news, and September wheat gained 13 and a quarter. Corn also ended the week higher, up 3 cents. It was a pretty good week in livestock trade as well. Cattle had the best week since February. Part of that based on better-than-expected cash cattle sales in the Southern Plains at $118 a hundredweight, and that was up $2 from the previous week. As a result, the August live cattle contract ended the week up $1.17 at $117.50. August feeder cattle ended the week $2.20 higher on Friday at $149.85. County fairs continue. State fairs continue. Get out and support the fair and have a good time. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You have a good day as well. On the market calendar for today, a couple of things going on. Nothing in the way of economic reports expected from the government today, but here's a couple of items that are happening. There's a new report that's going to be issued on e-cigarettes today. As a matter of fact, new government rules on those go into effect. For the first time, big retailers will no longer be able to sell those e-cigs to anyone under the age of 18. Also today, there is going to be a report on the number of sleepy drivers on the highways. That report coming out a little bit later on. Looking ahead to the rest of the week, this is going to be a big week in terms of retail sales. So we're going to see that retail sales report due on Friday. In the meantime, though, we have a couple of big quarterly earnings reports coming. One of them will be from Macy's, Michael Kors as well. So those will all come ahead of that retail sales report. Disney also set to report quarterly earnings today. Today, we expect to see quarterly earnings from News Corp, also from Allergan. That's coming before the bell this morning, but News Corp, I think, is going to be coming after the bell later on today. Not to pile on Delta Airlines, but to close out our show today, you've obviously heard about the problems Delta is having, but one of the other stories that sort of got buried in the news over the weekend was complaints by passengers on Delta Airlines that the movie that they were showing, Carol, if you remember that show, it includes some steamy sex scenes between two women. Well, apparently the flight to movie was censored heavily. Passengers are upset that the airline's showing an edited version of the movie that takes out a sex scene and also a same-sex kiss. This was a lot of fodder for comedians, especially over the weekend, who were tweeting about this, apparently not too happy with Delta Airlines. Delta says it gets these movies from a company that already edits the movies because of, all kinds of people on board planes, including children. But just sort of pile on Delta this morning for that.